From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The director, Robert Greene, says if you want to be relevant as a filmmaker, you have to take chances. You have to use the craft to grab people by the collar and make them watch. Here's the basic story he builds his latest film around. In 1974, a local TV newscaster in Sarasota, Florida, a woman named Christine Chubbuck, killed herself on live television. She pulled out a gun and shot herself in the head. But Greene wasn't interested in the straightforward story. He cast an actor, Kate Scheel, to play Christine, and his film is about her researching the character, preparing the role. The film raises some complicated questions. Among them, should a story like this even be told at all? And Greene includes himself in that question. We're talking about the film today. It's called Kate Plays Christine. Join us after the news.
KUER's volunteers give their time year-round to lend a helping hand. Our volunteers staff booths at special events, help with paperwork in our membership department, and assist the news and Radio West teams with behind-the-scenes details. Maybe you're a photographer or a graphic designer and you'd like to volunteer your skills. Or you have some spare time that you'd like to donate. We're always grateful for a little extra help from our friends. Find out more about volunteer opportunities at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There was this brutal scene that played out on live television in 1974. This was in Sarasota, Florida. A young newscaster, a woman named Christine Chubbuck, who suffered from severe depression, committed suicide on camera. She pulled out a handgun and shot herself in the back of the head. Robert Greene has been trying to make a film about Christine Chubbuck for nearly 10 years now, but for the longest time, he couldn't find a way in. Not so long ago, he started experimenting with a new form of filmmaking, kind of a hybrid of documentary and dramatic feature. He released a film in 2014 where he cast an actor. She was performing a role, but also playing herself. And that was his way in to this story. In the new film, premiering at Sundance this year, he's again cast an actor, this time Kate Scheel, to play the role of Christine Chubbuck. The crew travels to Sarasota with Kate to research Christine as a character. And along the way, Greene asks some really complicated emotional and ethical questions about a tragic story. Questions like, should a film about a woman afflicted with mental illness who commits a, as has been put, grossly public act, should that film be made at all? The film is called Kate Plays Christine. Today in the program, Robert Greene is joining us to talk about it. Greene is a filmmaker and a writer. Kate Plays Christine is his fifth feature-length film. We should also say he's an assistant professor at the University of Missouri School of Journalism. He writes about documentary for Filmmaker magazine, Sight and Sound, among others. And there are three screenings of Kate Plays Christine. We'll give you those details a little bit later as we go along. Robert Greene, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being
here. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks
for that nice introduction.
Oh, thanks. You've been thinking about this story for a long time now. It's like I think you said at some point 10 years you've been trying to find your way into this story. But would you start when you first heard the story or when you first – like what was the thing that interested you about this Christine Chubbuck story at first?
Well, it's undeniably interesting in many ways. First of all, the act itself was so sensational and so contradictory. She made a speech about not wanting to she made a speech about blood and guts television, and she did essentially the ultimate blood and guts television thing. And I guess that contradiction and that sort of what those questions raised was immediately something I couldn't shake. I wrestle a little bit myself with how much you're supposed to look at stuff. I have one side of me that thinks finding footage of anything that you think you need to see, as long as you're thinking about it, is okay. And I have another side that says that that's absolutely not. And that's just like, you know, my love of film and my love of images and my sort of where my brain and my heart go sometimes is in contradiction. So it was just immediately fascinating how much was brought up as soon as you hear the first details of the story.
Yeah.
But once you go a little bit deeper, you realize it would be hard for me to have tried to make a straightforward version of that. Being a man trying to make a film about a depressed woman who when you list the reasons why she might have done it, they're inadequate and pathetic and sad and awful. And so I didn't want to make a film that glorifies that in any way. And so I just, you know, this is also 2004, 2005, when my friend Nathan Gielgud, who's an artist, just told me the story. And this is 4 or 5 years before I even made my first film. So it was one of those things that just like it's there all the time. And then finally, like you said, after Actress in 2014, I just went to my old friend Kate and said, what if we do it this way?
How did she react?
Well,
because I have to say this film is packed with ambivalence, right? I'm almost on your part as it's expressed through the way the story's told. But also, of course, on Kate's part as a performer,
yeah,
as an actor.
We're very old friends. We've known each other for at least, you know, around 10 years as well. And and what's funny is that she was – the original concept for Actress was that it was a 3-part film and she was going to be one of the parts.
Wow.
And then Brandy's story sort of took over. She immediately said yes. I think – part of why she said yes was because Sean Price Williams, who we've known each other. We've all been such good friends for so long. We like to work together, and Kate and I have never really had that chance to work together because she's acting and I'm making documentaries, and that doesn't normally intersect.
Right.
She immediately said yes, which was like so moving to me because the reason why I wanted her wasn't just because the title is snappy or something like that. She's one of the most thoughtful people I've ever met. And I knew that watching her wrestle with this would be fascinating because her ambivalence is genuine. And it's not – she's performing a version of herself in the film, but the resistance to exploit is so deep in her that could be the subject of the movie.
Yeah, it's true. And I have to say, we'll talk a little bit more about this later. Just the thing that really comes across too is how much actors, serious actors, actors who commit to a part, feel this sense of protection and responsibility for a role. And man, that came through in this.
Yeah, I just imagine being, you know, I mean, we had many women helping to make the film as well, but it was Sean and I, two friends that she felt comfortable with, but two men behind the camera filming her, and she's trying to represent and trying to describe and trying to figure out how this connects to her own life. I can't imagine what that feels like, obviously. Yeah. And it's an intense feeling. And and the other thing about that is that she's also playing a version of herself. So she has to be hyper aware of her own self. It's you know, it's not surprising that the first time she watched the film all the way through was the other night at the premiere.
Wow.
Yeah, she's seen many versions and many iterations of scenes and everything, but the first time she sat and watched the whole thing was Sunday night because, I mean, that's an intense spotlight to put on your own, you know, psyche in some ways. And I mean, you know, but also she's very artfully embodying all of our anxieties in the way that, you know, De Niro is embodying the anxieties of Scorsese in Raging Bull or something, not just representing a real person, but embodying everything about that real person that makes the filmmakers freak out, you know?
Yeah.
And so Kate, that's what Kate's also doing.
Let's play a moment from the film, because I want to talk to you a little bit about what it is that you figure Kate is trying to learn, because it's such a process that she goes through. And I think at this moment in the film, she talks about what it is she's sort of trying to get at it. Here's a moment from Kate Plays Christine.
I mean, I guess my interest in her at first was like pretty superficial. It's just she's the first person who killed herself on air, and that's like a remarkable moment. But it does seem that the story has been largely forgotten. I mean, in terms of availability of information, that's very frustrating. And it's also just kind of sad. So I have to learn as much about Christine Chubbuck as I possibly can. But I also have to try and understand the mind of a person who would kill herself.
You know, the thing that's so interesting, the story, as you said, was so sensational. I was surprised at how few details there really were for her to mine at first. I mean, the process of you taking... I don't know how big the crew was. I'm assuming you and Sean, right? And Cade and maybe a few others going to Sarasota. But you didn't know how the thing was going to end. And you didn't. And I'm sure there are things that she didn't know about Christine when she went there, right? I mean, it was actually a process of discovery.
Yeah, I deliberately asked her not to do research. But like as she's pointed out in other places, if she would have done the research, it would have taken 20 minutes. Part of that is because the truth is that Christine Chubbuck committed suicide on television for probably 400 people. This was 1974 in a tiny television market in a tiny television station. And as someone explained to us, everyone's antennas at the time were pointing the other direction. And that adds a layer of sort of awful patheticness to the whole thing. So it's sensational, but it's so tiny at the same time. It's so big. It's bigger than anything. It's like one of the craziest things that's ever happened on television. But it happened for so few people that creates a sort of discrepancy between the event and how much people know about it.
And she doesn't – like she's an actor trying to prepare – a woman who died in 1974, you'd think, who was a newscaster, there would be tape everywhere of this woman. And I don't want to give too much away about the film, but she has to start from scratch. Like, she has image photographs, obviously. But if you're an actor trying to sort of – what does her voice sound like? How serious is she? What's the cadence and all of that? She has nothing to go on at first.
Yeah, she has nothing to go on. And that's – I mean, that lack of information comes from – a lot of things. It comes from Sarasota being a place, from my experience there, and I've been there a few times through film festivals, which is not a very accurate representation of the place, but then we spent, you know, almost a month there. It's a place that looks forward more than back a lot.
Denial? No.
No, I think it's a place where a lot of people, you know, Florida in general is a place where immigrants from other countries come to New York or Philadelphia, and then eventually they realize, oh, I could breathe a lot better if I get to Florida.
It's cold here.
Yeah. I mean, like the wig maker in the film, who's one of my favorite people we met along our journey, she left Philadelphia, for example, because she couldn't breathe. Mm. And she went to Florida and she can breathe. And she says, basically, why would she think about these things? Yeah. Well, like it's sunny every day. It's beautiful. She can go to the beach. Why would she dwell on a suicide that no one saw that was horrible and makes you think about things that you don't want to necessarily think about? And I think at first I thought there's a denial of history here, but actually I think it's really healthy, and it's really and so part of what's happening is we're going there somewhat obsessed, and the rest of the place is not that obsessed, and that's something that I think you see transpire in the film.
Yeah, it's true. Well, you mentioned this wig maker. It was one of my favorite moments in the film, oddly, because it's like not necessarily critical to the sort of plot line of the story, but it's such a kind of a lovely, sad moment. And I want to play this moment. Maybe we can talk a little bit about it. Part of the process that Cade is going through to discover Christine is this physical transformation.
Yeah.
And so she goes and gets a spray tan. She's pretty fair-skinned. And so she goes through this process of trying to darken her skin because Christine Chubbuck had darker skin. She gets contacts for her eyes to change the color of her eyes. I mean, she goes through this process that's really remarkable. She just going swimming and buying plush toys because, you know, for the place where she was staying in Sarasota. I mean, she really tries to inhabit the character. It's really interesting. And so she goes to get, as you said, there's this wig maker. She goes to buy this wig for Christine. And we set this moment up for us because it's just sort of casual conversation, but it turns out to be kind of a lovely, kind of heartbreaking moment.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things the film is about is how when someone commits suicide in general or when some, especially in this sensational way, there's a need to explain why. And that's just a human need, right? And but when there's a vacuum of information, what you do is you fill that information with yourself. And what we found along the way is everyone had something that deeply connected them, whether they had just heard about the story 5 minutes ago or whether they were in Sarasota when it happened or whether they knew the family. And that was immediate apparent. So this was the first thing we actually shot when we got to Sarasota, because just for scheduling reasons, we needed to have access to the wig. And it was immediately, we were taken by how much she put herself into the story. And I think you see that in the exchange between them.
This part goes forward, and this one is kind of, she's so somber, so sad looking. It's heartbreaking when you look at her. It's like you're prettier than she was.
Oh my gosh. That's
I'm just worried about how you're going to be able to be so sad and so, like the whole world fell on your head or on your back.
Yeah.
I don't think I can be that sad.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that's like, you know, this we just met her minutes before this, and to immediately go that deep with how she was concerned about Kate, because Kate's someone who is just a nice person and is a lovely person, and walks in and she's a little bit, she's shy and she's a little bit socially awkward, and this woman immediately had like a sort of relationship with her that felt protective.
Yeah.
And that to me just speaks about what what Christine Chubbuck did, and how it gives you fear, and it gives you pause, and it gives you, you know, it's traumatic even if you just knew about it for 5 minutes.
Yeah. So let's talk about what we know about this story. Because a lot of the film is about whether – how many of these sensational details do you go into? Should we tell this story at all? Is it exploiting this tragic moment and this woman who had clearly some mental health issues? There's a telling of it from Sally Quinn, amazingly, of The Washington Post. She writes this story about it. And you use this in some ways as kind of a text that we see Kate reading from Sally Quinn, which it's kind of a nice article in the sense that it's a kind of beautifully written, gets at some of the issues. And I want to play this moment from the film because this is Kate reading kind of the sensational moment of the story, or certainly the particulars about it. And I want, because I think it's important that we sort of establish this moment and how you felt about the details to reveal. Again, another moment from Kate plays Christine.
Her right arm stiffened. We bring you another first. Her voice was steady. She looked up again into the camera. Her eyes were dark, direct, and challenging. An attempted suicide. Her right hand came up from under the anchor desk, and it was a .38 caliber revolver. She pointed it at the lower back of her head and pulled the trigger. A loud crack was heard, a puff of smoke blew out from the gun, and her hair flew up around her face as though a sudden gust of wind had caught it. Her mouth wrenched downward. Her head shook. And then her body fell forward with a resounding thud against the anchor desk and slowly slipped out of sight. On the desk, after Chris had been rushed to the hospital, a blood-soaked news story was found. It was the story of her own suicide attempt written in longhand. Okay, so she typed out the news copy that she was going to read, but she had handwritten what she wanted them to read after, earlier. It described the attempt, how she was taken to Sarasota Memorial Hospital, and it listed her in critical condition. Wow.
What I think is so interesting about that piece is this really reveals an aspect of the film that's interesting, and that is that And Kate talks about this, not only the sensational details of the story, but also the process. She's talking to you, I guess, right behind the camera, and which is not easy for an actor. I mean, she confesses, and this is hard for me, Robert. I would normally be internalizing all of this, and so speaking it is rough. It's difficult, but obviously for the sake of the conceit of the film, she has to talk about it. Would you just talk about that it's not her normal process, so it must have been even more difficult as an actor.
Yeah, I mean, what you're seeing, that what you're hearing there, seeing in the film, is her acting like she's reading the article, which she had probably, and maybe she'd read it already. Actually, I think that might have been the first time she read the whole thing.
Yeah.
And which was, you know, the documentary aspect of it is we're capturing the first time she's reading this article, right? But she's an actor, so she's acting that out. And then I'm asking her to do that. And that's, if not made clear by me saying something like action, it's made clear enough in the framing and the way you watch the image. Meanwhile, she's also learning this information or refreshing this information and being emotionally drawn to and horrified by what she's hearing or reading. And there's – so immediately in just an act of reading an article, there's like five layers of I guess, like representation and reality or something. And hopefully that – to me, it's like – You can blur the lines between fiction and nonfiction, and that could be an academic exercise, and that could stop short of giving you any emotional involvement, and it could be all in your head. It could be an intellectual thing, but if you start from that place, if you get the viewer in a position where you start to read into all the images, then we can go into the aspects that the film goes into later, which about the nature of storytelling and whether we should be looking at this at all, whether we should be even telling the story at all.
And something you said that relationship between our real and our staged selves.
Yeah. I mean, because the truth is that all documentaries are relationships between real and staged.
Right.
I mean, it's a movie. We're making choices. We're fabricating aspects of by when you frame a shot, you're making a fabrication. So we're just taking that stuff and trying to get you to think about that. And that thinking about it hopefully is fruitful. Hopefully it gives you a deeper sense of the psychology behind performing. And if you can understand the psychology behind performing and telling a story, then you can think about Christine Chubbuck and what she did and her mental illness and what her needs were as a human being in a deeper way, hopefully. Hopefully it's productive.
Yeah, and it's such on the razor edge of being – it could veer off into self-indulgence really quick.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it doesn't.
Well, that's good.
No, I mean it really doesn't. But I mean it could – you know, an actor talking about per process.
Oh, well –
What a cliche is that?
Right.
But man.
Right. Well, one of the things we know is that people are drawn to actors and then people are also repulsed by actors.
Right.
It can kind of explain our entire celebrity culture by a simple thing of – I'm so fascinated by that beautiful person and I also hate them because they don't have to do any real work, which we of course know is not true, but that's the perception. And the way Kate has to talk about herself is very hard to keep her from sounding self-indulgent. She's one of the least self-indulgent people I've ever met, truly. And the film itself, the form of the film could be self-indulgent. So, but hopefully it's a film that's interrogating all those things as you're watching. And so much of it rests on her being thoughtful. And one of the cliches we think about actors is that they're not thoughtful. And the truth is they're often very, very thoughtful. And especially my friend Kate, who you know, I trust her instincts. I trust her brain and her way of thinking more than maybe anybody I know. And that's one of the things I wanted to make sure we saw. And that sort of rescues us. At some point in the film, she says, you know, I can't say this is hard because who cares? But you know what? It is hard. Yeah. It actually is hard to capture something and put it back on screen, especially when I'm shy and thoughtful. And this is very difficult for me in some ways.
Robert Greene is with us. He's the director of the film Kate Plays Christine, which you can see tomorrow afternoon at 3:45 at the Broadway in Salt Lake City. There are also going to be screenings Thursday and Friday here in Park City. For all the details, you can visit us at radiowest.org. We are live at community radio station KPCW talking with Robert Greene about his film, and we need to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling another film at the Sundance Film Festival, this one made by filmmaker Robert Greene. And it's an original take on the documentary form. It's the story of Christine Chubbuck, a local TV reporter in Florida who committed suicide. She shot herself on live television in 1974. And Greene examines Christine's story, really, her mental illness, her commitment to journalism, does it by casting an actor, Kate Scheel, to play the role of Christine. The film is basically Kate preparing for this role, and it's a deeply honest exploration of why all of us are actually interested in this story and whether a film like this should have been made at all. There are a number of screenings for Kate Plays Christine. We'll give you some details about that a little bit later on the program. So this is it true that this particular story was one of the inspirations for the film Network?
Well, yeah, that's been somewhat complicated recently. Mm-hmm. I guess there was a draft of Network before, like in 1973, and then there was another draft later where Christine Chubbuck's suicide was actually referenced, apparently. Mm-hmm. And then the final film took inspiration from her story. So, one of the things there is that you take inspiration from a story about a woman committing suicide and turn it into a man who's, you know, very, you know, I mean, obviously Network is great, but turned the character into
but
a man.
Kate's bugged by the fact how does she put it in the, she's talking to her dad, she says,
macho man.
He takes a depressed woman and turns it into an angry macho man.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like of a common, I don't think that – obviously this is a very specific example of that, but that's a very common thing that happens where it's like, okay, let me – and in some ways this film is us doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Let's take this woman's story and let's try to see what it make, how it makes us feel. Let's try to represent it how it makes us feel, you know. And I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong – I mean, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with men making films about women or women making films about men or different races making films about each other, because I think oftentimes the other eyes, the difference, the alien eyes, that sort of other that, you know, you're help you see something and help you inspect something. But it's very important that we make sure that we're aware of the complexity of that and how.
That's the second time you've mentioned that. You clearly have this on your mind, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I've made three films that where women are the subjects, and I mean that might be because I have issues with my mother. I don't know, but but it's important for me to investigate my and sort of interrogate my own reasoning behind that, because otherwise you just end up reproducing sort of cultural cliches, yeah. You know, if you're not thinking about it.
You said something once I wanted to ask you about. You said that the movies that you always had responded to were not story driven per se. I feel sheepish reading a quote from you from maybe some time ago that you're like, did I say that? Do you still feel that way? Would you give me a sense of what you were talking about?
Yeah, I'm a person who, if you go to an action film and there's like two bad guys, I'm just like, wait, why is that? I don't know what, you know.
Yeah.
But I get confused by narratives often. I'm like, because I'm hardly ever watching narratives when I'm watching a film. I'm watching other things. And I don't think that that's rare, actually. I have a lot of cinephile friends who are like that as well. Like, you just get really obsessed with this crazy moment where the camera's doing this thing that you've never seen before, and then the music is weird, and you're like, how did they make that emotionally work? You know, that's always been the way I've experienced movies. Having said that, I think, you know, one of the things that filmmakers have to do is understand their viewer. So a lot of times you hear independent filmmakers and documentarians and art filmmakers and whatnot talk about how they don't really care about the audience and what the audience thinks. I'm the exact opposite. I really, really, really care about where a viewer's head is throughout the process of the film. So I had, despite my lack of narrative love, I had to learn narrative because I want to play with it. So I had to learn it and learn how to tell stories. But I still think that we tell stories through visual things, through contradictory things, through ambiguous things, through tension, through really putting the viewer in a position where they're reading into what they're seeing and then trying to understand. And then if you can get them to try to understand what they're actually viewing, then you can take the viewer somewhere. And that's cinema to me, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. If you look at the way you – and I won't – again, I can't say too much about this because I'll give too much away. But the way you at moments sort of establish a kind of expectation for the audience in the way – I'll just say the way Kate's preparing for this particular moment of this – of the of the role she's playing, you're not manipulating us, but you're a director. You're sending us.
I'm absolutely manipulating.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm an editor as well.
To that. Yeah.
You know, so manipulating. I remember having a conversation with Sean, who shot the film at Kim's Video many years ago, and we were talking about this and talking about documentary versus fiction stuff. And he's like, you know, most documentaries don't manipulate me as enough. You know,
yeah.
Movies are supposed to manipulate you. How much you are aware of that manipulation is key, I think. This is a movie about whether you should look at something
right.
or not.
Right.
And so I'm absolutely putting the viewer in a position where they're being manipulated into a position where in the end, the viewer is asked to look at themselves and say, how much did you want to see this? Because that's where the film turns from inward looking us and our process and us trying to understand ourselves to outward facing, you know?
You're literally asking us that.
Literally asking it. And that can seem preachy or something. It can seem didactic. But I think it's useful. And it's not – and I'm certainly not the first person to try to do that. I think there's a great history of films that ask their viewers to say, hey, why did you watch this, you know, Peeping Tom or you know, the great Michael Powell film and, you know – many other examples of films that say, hey, viewer, think about why, what is this feeling of voyeurism in yourself? And then let's try to figure that out.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of one of the basic things of cinema is activating and manipulating and exploiting that feeling of voyeurism that we have in ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think if we ignore that, we're lying.
There's another sort of interesting theme in the film, and that is we meet people along the way who knew Christine or sort of knew of her. And everyone sort of takes the license to say what was going on in her mind. And I think this drives Kate crazy because that's what she's trying to sort of figure out. But, you know, she is really trying to learn as much as she possibly can. Let me play a moment from the film. This is Harold. Is it Bubel? Is that how we pronounce it?
Bubley, I think.
Bubley, yeah. Okay. He's a reporter for the newspaper there, the Sarasota Herald Tribune. He's been there for a long time. And he knew of Christine at the time, 1974. And he takes this moment to sort of say what he thought was going on. Here's another moment from the film.
She's kind of edgy, you know. My recollection was that she had kind of a hard edge to her, you know, that you don't have. You know, you're very soft and, you know, pleasant looking. And she looked, you know, kind of like tough. She looked tough to me, you know. And so if you're going to play this role, I would recommend you need to have like a simmering undercurrent of some kind of resentment or personal turmoil. Mm-hmm. And you need to have this intensity and, you know, there's nothing placid about Christine Chubbuck. You know, when you come down to it, she proved it. The fact that she asked for her show to be videotaped that day indicates to me premeditation. You are somebody who's plotting something, and there's going to be a victim, and it's not going to end well, and you're the victim.
I want to ask you about that, because I think that's so interesting. how's Kate reacting to that? Because these people who figure they know her... And I think she bristles at all of this.
Yeah, I mean, Harold was—he basically just started as a young journalist the summer, like a month before Christine Chubbuck took her life, and he knew of her, and So he's been really thinking about this for 40 years in some capacity. I think he even said maybe his mother saw it on television or something. He wasn't sure about that. But and so he's come – and he's a journalist. So he's coming at it with that instinct of explanation, which is a totally rational human instinct to try to say, you know, this is why. Because how else do you cope with that piece of information? Someone – a woman goes on, you know, television, gives a speech, shoots herself in the head. How else do you cope with that other than say
– turmoil.
Why? Like why? And I think – but that – and that why oftentimes, especially in that situation where you've been thinking about it so long, it comes out like a fully formed thought. And that – but that fully formed thought is so subjective and so specific to who's saying it. And so what we – I'm glad that that resonates in the film because when then she – you know, Kate's trying to do the same thing, but she's also trying to reject that way of thinking. And she's trying to reject that way of simplifying because she needs to for her own, you know, coping with what she's about to go through in the role and taking on the reenactment. So, I mean, I think it – and some of that's just him flirting with her too, you know, like which is right. kind of lovely actually.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like such a really human moment of like this guy's like, hey, you're cute, you know. And that's – I mean, I think that's the process. I mean, what one of the things we saw is that when men talk to Kate, there's that voice that you hear. I mean, it's been called mansplaining, you know, which I kind of hate that term, but I know what it, I mean, it's that voice of like, let me tell you how it is, honey. And that is something that all women face and that specifically in this search, Kate found again and again.
Yeah.
Harold's a great guy. I mean, he's just trying to help us out by help us understanding what he knows, which is – so you're seeing that tension as well, I think.
I want to ask you before we head to another break here, I wanted to ask you about – there's a couple of these moments where you have – she goes to the gun store, not the actual place, but the same gun store has been in business for, I don't know, 70 years or something like that, where Christine Chubbuck actually bought the handgun that she used to kill herself. And Kate goes. She goes as Kate. And then you also have her go as, in the wig, basically as Christine. Would you talk about that moment? I think there are a couple of these moments where she and it's so interesting to me to see, oh, there's Kate. And then when she's acting, there's this kind of serene sort of presence that she has. I have to say it almost made her seem like a ghost. Would you talk about that?
Yeah, she's – that scene specifically is early in the process of her trying to inhabit Christine in some ways. And – she defaults to this sort of ethereal quality, almost like Christine at first was just a ghost. And that's what you're kind of seeing, I think.
But this is early on. She comes to know her in a different way.
Yeah, and what you're seeing throughout the film is an incomplete sketch of a performance. And you know, the truth is if we would have filmed for another 3 weeks, Kate would have probably nailed this performance in a very traditional way. We would have seen her really – because she's a great actor, and we would have seen her become Christine Chubbuck in the best way possible. But I purposely put her in this position of having of documenting the sketch aspect of it. And what you're seeing there, I think, is a couple of things. I think you're seeing her default to this position of almost like, I mean, there's a guy says, "Oh, I thought you were a statue."
Yeah.
In that moment, and that means everything to me because that's all she knew to do. It's almost like she didn't want to do anything wrong, so she was almost frozen. And that's where she was in the process. But you're also seeing Kate investigating something, sort of putting someone a little bit on their heels with some questions, and then that person collaborating with us to create a moment that's somewhat fiction.
Yeah.
Hopefully that gives you an in to understand that this is not this is not just simply an investigation. It's not simply a fictional representation. It's some sort of contradictory, ambiguous slamming together of those two things. And hopefully that just makes you think, wow, what it must be like to try to inhabit Christine Chubbuck. What does that mean? And that's everything for us, I think.
Robert Greene is with us, director of Kate Plays Christine. You can see it tomorrow afternoon, again, at 3:45. It's going to be at the Broadway in Salt Lake City, but there are also screenings here in Park City if you're here on Thursday and on Friday. You can get the details on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with filmmaker Robert Greene. We're talking about his film, Kate Plays Christine. It is kind of a hybrid documentary slash feature. It is the story of Christine Chubbuck, who in 1974, she was a newscaster, Sarasota, Florida. Young. She was 29 years old, and she committed suicide on live television. Greene is exploring that in the film. I wanted to ask you a little bit about Kate's frustration that she's feeling. Let me play another moment here, because there are these moments when you could tell that she's exasperated with this role, maybe exasperated with you in some ways, like you're not giving it to me, or I haven't gotten it, or whatever. She's just, there are these moments where she's really, really frustrated. Let me play this moment, and we can talk a little bit about it.
I feel frustrated because I don't know. I haven't been able to find out very much. A lot of people have opinions about her. A few people remember the story, but no one's had any real particular insight. These people are like 6 degrees removed, but have opinions about what might have driven her to do it. I don't know. I'm just shooting in the dark.
And she really sort of lashes out at a few moments too. I don't mean in a bad way, but
no,
she's really trying to figure it out.
It's real. I mean, there's two things to say about that. One, Kate is a total collaborator in the film,
yeah,
which means she knows what we need. Meaning, she knows that her being exasperated with the role takes us to the place that we need to be at. So part of that is an incredible performance, actually. It's incredibly – she's drawing on real frustrations like any actor would to create moments for the camera. But there was an underlying, you know, tension. And I mean, this was the concept of the movie from the beginning, was like, we're going to watch you, and the thing that's going to happen, Kate, is that you're going to be bad at acting. Imagine like saying, hey, you know, we're going to do this great, you know, conceptual radio piece where you're going to be bad at interviewing me.
Right.
And then but not only bad at interviewing me, but you also have to still make it interesting radio. And like it's
– you have to commit to it.
You have to commit to it.
Yeah.
And it's like – so it's somewhat impossible task that I – or possible position that I put her in. But once again, she knew from the beginning that that was the position she was in. So she's exploring sort of her own inadequacies as an actor, mm-hmm, in this very raw way. Sometimes that spills over to genuine frustration, where I think she wanted scenes just not to be in the movie. There's one stairwell scene where she was basically like, why are we doing this? Why do we have to do this? And
yeah,
I was like, now that you feel that way for real, let's really do this. Because
because
I think, you know, although she's a collaborator, although the performance is consistent, she's always aware that she's performing. She's always aware of what we need to make this film, to raise the questions that we wanted to raise. The genuine, authentic sort of documentary frustration spills over. And that was hard to actually experience because a lot of what you – I'm also kind of the villain in the film in a way. You know, I'm the one pushing this thing forward. And I think that's not only true, It's also I'm also hopefully using that to make you think about the making of it. But there was many times where I, as a documentary filmmaker trying to direct this fictional aspect of something, I needed Kate to guide me. Mm-hmm. So she, you know, and so because sometimes I didn't give her enough guidance, and that was frustrating for me too. And you know, I mean, every film features a moment, or every film, you know, the making of every film has a moment in it where everyone looks at the director and says, you know what, you're just a jerk. Yeah. You're just the guy we don't really want to do this for anymore. That was especially hard in this process because of how close we were.
Yeah.
And how much everything we were doing was thought through together. There were moments that were just like, you know what, Robert, I don't like this. And so I tried in the documentary sense, in the nonfiction sense, I really tried to make sure that was actually in the film, that you could say, Robert, you shouldn't be asking her to do this.
Right. Well, and not only that, there were moments, I have to say, where you get a sense that you're wondering if she'd really trust you anymore. Like, she's come to this deeper place, and she's come to this – to understand this woman in a really intimate way, and she wonders if you get that anymore. And
yeah.
Rather, in fact, you have – sort of betrayed the big concept that it's that you have gone for the sensational. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah,
that kind of comes through.
No, that's great because the truth is that only she could have gotten that close.
Yeah.
And that my job is to capture images. My job is to get us moments to make a film. And that is an inherent tension. Only Kate could have gotten to the point where she owned it and felt, you know, responsible in that sense. And so she's putting that back out at us. When she's delivering her lines at the end of the film, which I, of course, won't give away,
yeah,
those are directed towards me and they're directed towards people watching this.
Right.
And that is hopefully – it's affected my life. It's affected how I feel about myself. And that was – you know, a lot of – like I said before, a lot of this is such an internal looking thing. To me, it's like – why was I obsessed with Christine Chubbuck for 10 years before I made a film? What does that say about me? What does that say about my own inclinations as a human being, as a man, how I see women, how I might fetishize craziness, how I might fetishize, you know, madness as a sexy thing or something? And Kate is there hopefully to say, you know what? Look at yourself, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're the reason why we're here. And you need to look at that. And if we could actually get that in the film, I think it's something of a victory.
Let me play another moment. This is a news anchor in Sarasota. He didn't know Christine, but part of her process of discovery is talking to a gun shop owner, reporters, and news people, TV news people. Like she goes and talks to this man named John Hill in Sarasota. And it's interesting and kind of disappointing, the perception of Christine from people who knew of her. They kind of joke about the fact that when something goes wrong in the TV station, it's like, oh, there's Christine. She's this kind of gremlin in the wiring, which seems disrespectful and kind of sad. And then he talks about the fact that what she did, this, as Sally Quinn put it in her Washington Post article, this grossly public act, accomplished nothing. Here's John Hill. This is he's an anchor in Sarasota from the film Kate Plays Christine.
As far as what Christine did that afternoon, it was a total waste of time, total waste of one good bullet, and total waste of the people that continued to talk about it, because it accomplished nothing. It didn't help her with her depression. It didn't help reset anything with women in this business. It didn't help anything other than make a sensational statement that, who remembers yesterday's headline?
How does Kate react to that?
It's an amazing moment when he says that. I think... I think the anger that he's exhibiting, who knows where that comes from?
Yeah,
but it's real.
And in some ways, he's right. Like, what did that accomplish, Christine?
That's the crazy thing. Is it's harsh, but he's right.
Yeah,
and that's unsettling, because it's because it is disrespectful of someone's life, but that person took their own life and that person made a spectacle out of taking their own life. And so that raises this, the whole question of, you know, I mean, basically we've heard from the wig maker, the sadness that she speaks about it, and then the anger here. These are all very, very rational, very normal, very human responses to suicide. At the same time, when you're Kate and you're trying to have an intimate connection with someone, that's very, very, very hard to hear. And so I think that helps put her in this position because, once again, I'm talking about how she was acting, right? I'm talking about how she was performing a version of herself the whole time. Yeah. That is a 100% documentary interview moment where someone says something and you react to it. That obviously directly influences the performance and directly influences how she goes forward. That's a hard thing to hear, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it what it really does is once again bring up that feeling of that which is probably the real subject of the film. I think there's a lot of subjects of this movie. But the real subject for me probably is when someone commits suicide, it creates a hole. And what you put in that hole is yourself. What you put in that hole is your ideas about the world. And what John Hill clearly is saying there is his ideas about the world. Like, if you want to change something, be productive. Don't – if you want to do something, if you want to reset, you know, the thing for women in this business, go on and make a speech and do something or start a labor movement or whatever. Don't kill yourself.
Yeah. Let me ask you this finally. We have less than a minute left. You've talked about how you would like to think that every movie you make going forward is going to be taking chances like this. After having made it, do you still feel that way?
I mean, yeah. I'm so honored truly to be given this platform, at Sundance, with a movie that I'm proud of to have to be, you know, really stirring the waters a little bit. I think a lot of times you are given a platform when you don't take chances. A lot of times you're given a platform when you do the thing that reinforces what the audience already knows or what they care about or, you know, plays with emotions that are very easy to deal with. And it's not as often that you're given this platform when you're, you know, trying to do different things. So I'm really thankful for that.
Robert Greene. This film is Kate Plays Christine, screening tomorrow afternoon in Salt Lake City, Thursday and Friday in Park City. All the details are on our website, radiowest.org. Thanks very much for the time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your thoughtful questions, too.
Thanks a lot. Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.